There's nothing on earth like a lava flow, as anyone who has seen a molten river flow down the slopes of Kilauea can attest. Now, a Syracuse University collaboration between a sculptor and a geologist is bringing the spectacle of a lava flow to the East Coast. Dr. Jeff Carson is the geologist of the pair, and he spoke with us about the Syracuse Lava Project.
Our project started out when my colleague, Professor Robert Wysocki, in our sculpture department, came into my department and basically told me he wanted to make some lava. And he'd come to me because he'd seen on my website that I knew something about volcanic rocks. And, of course, I thought the guy was interested in making ashtrays or something like that, some sort of arts and crafts type project. But I immediately recognized that he knew a lot about science, a lot about geology, and but not that much about lava at the time. And so I was able to advise him about what sort of material we might melt up and exactly what kind of temperatures and kind of, you know, the basic science behind what we'd need to do. But he's a very gifted guy in terms of the foundry arts, very creative and innovative, and he's, you know, managed to figure out how to do this. So we ultimately ordered a couple tons of crushed up basaltic rock from the Mid-Continent Rift, a place that was kind of like the East African Rift about 1.5 billion years ago, and that's the material we've been working with ever since. We melt up big batches of it, a few hundred pounds at a time, and pour it out to make kind of tabletop size lava flows, basically the same size as the sort of typical flow lobes that form in the Pahoehoe lava flows in Hawaii.
What does it take to get rock to flow like a liquid?
Well, one of the main things is the temperature.
I figured,
We have to crank it up to about 1,200 degrees centigrade. So that's about 2,100 Fahrenheit, or as I like to tell my students, you know, it's about five times hotter than your oven goes at home. So you're not going to do it at home. And, of course, you know, it'd be possible, you know, just in terms of material science to add fluxes and things like that. But we don't do that. We want to have a completely unadulterated natural lava that where we can study the details of the property of that basaltic melt, you know, just as you might do with a lava flow at a at an ongoing eruption, except under highly controlled experimental conditions.
You made a reference to fluxes. What are those?
Fluxes, just as anyone who's done any soldering, for example, knows, is something you add to make the material flow better. And, you know, typical fluxes in ceramic industries would be things like lithium chloride and things like that.
So you're making Pahoehoe lava and pure basaltic rock, molten basaltic rock, 2,100 Fahrenheit, right?
That's right.
So having done that, you've got material for art as well as science, don't you?
We do. You know, our project is really a fusion of science, art, education, and public outreach. The art part, since you ask about it, is one of the things that inspires Bob Wysocki, my colleague, is he calls himself a landscape artist who doesn't paint. He thinks all landscape painting has basically been done, and he wants to do something different. And basically, what he'd like to do is make a lava landscape. I know something that people in Hawaii would be familiar with, but people here in central New York, many have not seen anything like that, maybe on the Discovery Channel or something. But he would like to make basaltic lava flow fields in places they don't necessarily belong geologically, and to make them completely as geologically accurate as he possibly can. So that's one of our next projects, to, you know, go from these sort of increments that are tabletop size up to an area that'll be somewhat larger, maybe, you know, baseball diamond size, something like that.
Jeff, have you seen lava flow in Hawaii?
I have. It's been a long time ago, but I was out there, and I've seen lava flows in Iceland as well, where I do a lot of research. But yeah, it's you know, for me, it's absolutely inspiring. I mean, I don't care how many natural lava flows I visit or how many experiments we do, and we've done hundreds now. I mean, it's just incredibly exciting and inspiring to see this exotic, you know, bright incandescent orange material flowing and evolving as rapidly and in such a complex way as it does.
You know, Jeff, I too have seen that as a news photographer on Hawaii Island, especially in the 80s, from the 83, beginnings of the 83 eruption. Here's something I've always wondered about. When Kalapana was overrun by lava, there were some attempts to save homes by directing, I watched firefighters direct their water right at the leading edge of a lava flow in order to protect someone's house. And I saw how rapidly cold water changes the lava, you know, forms that crust over the lava. I know there have been some experiments in this nature, but theoretically, given enough water, could a lava flow be diverted?
Absolutely. And this was done successfully in 1973 in the Haimé eruption just south of Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
The fishing village on an island was basically inundated with a lava flow, 400 homes destroyed. And basically the fire department got their fire hoses and pumps out and sprayed seawater on the advancing lava flow front. They were able to cool it off rapidly enough, just as you've described, to make it solidify and make kind of a barrier that diverted the lava that was coming down the slope behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in fact, diverted it into the ocean and actually improved their harbor.
That's pretty amazing. I didn't realize that it had ever been done successfully. I did observe, you know, local firefighters doing that on to save a particular home, and it seemed as if had they had enough water, it might have worked. That's you saying it might have or it would have.
Yeah. In fact, you know, we've done a whole family of experiments here, including in collaboration with USGS investigator Hannah Dietrich, who's done a lot of work out in Hawaii. But, you know, digging a hole, building different types of barriers, anything you do to perturb the lava flow tends to cool it down. And if you can cool down that lava flow front, you can begin to divert it. And so, you know, that's a typical kind of experiment that some of our undergraduate students like to engage in particular. Everybody wants to think we can control nature, but of course, you know, if the volume of lava is large, I don't think we'll be diverting it very easily.
Probably not. Is there a great deal more to learn about lava?
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of ironic. You know, we think of our planet, we look at the blue ocean and the yellow continents. And the blue part, we usually think about the water. And in fact, underneath that water is a vast lava flow field. And of course, on ocean islands like Iceland, Hawaii, and so forth, we can see eruptions taking place in those types of places. So there's lava all over the place. It's on other terrestrial planets. It's on our moon. But we actually don't understand that much about it, in part because it's very difficult and dangerous to study. People in Hawaii know this very well. But also, lava is complicated stuff. In addition to being made up of, you know, silicon and oxygen and whole array of other atoms that get mixed into that material, that molten material. There are bubbles, so there's gases in there. There are crystals that start to form in the lava. The lava responds in a very peculiar way as it cools, as it moves down slopes. And, you know, some of those variations account for the incredible diversity of forms that lava takes in nature. Hoihoi lava is very common in Hawaii, of course, but also a'a lavas and then underwater pillow lavas can form. I mean, these are all reflections of how the crust develops as the lava flow advances. And many different factors can start to influence the viscosity and how that crust develops. And, yeah, we're a long way from understanding how those individual parameters influence a lava flow. That's one of the things we do in our experiments, just try to vary something simple like the vesicle content in the lavas, the bubbles, or how it flows over a wet material, because that affects it as well. We try to do those things. But, wow, somewhere down the line, we have to start studying the synergistic effects. How do combinations of, say, wet ground and bubbles in the lava affect the way the lava flow behaves. And that'll be much more complicated, but it's one step at a time for us.
Jeff, with all this yet to learn, you'll always have a job, right?
I'd hope so. You know, it's actually kind of ironic. We actually have had really limited success in attracting funding for this project, even though we have a couple hundred million hits on our website and downloads of videos that we posted and things like that. I think it's because we are trying to do too many things at once here. It's, you know, it's science, it's art, it's education. If we focused in one of those areas, we'd probably do better. But, you know, the bottom line is it's just too exciting and too much fun to ignore any of them.
Jeff Carson is a professor of earth sciences at Syracuse University in upstate New York. He started the Syracuse University Lava Project with his colleague Robert Wysocki, a sculptor and assistant professor of studio arts there. You can find a link to the Lava Project on the Conversation page at hawaiipublicradio.org.